sit there with other believers and listen to a praise band playing and just think, you know what? All we can really do is seek God and seek God's face and ask Him to do something in our world and continue to do the best we can at being salt and light in a tasteless and dark world. But I encourage you, continue to pray. Pray for our country. Don't pray as those aggressive prayers of take care of these people or take care of that. Just pray that God works.
Pray that God heals. Pray that God moves in our country. And please continue to do that. We'll be concluding our series today that we've called Light and Life. We've been going through the book of John since last summer. And in this portion of Scripture, we've seen Jesus reveal Himself as the light of the world and really our very essence of being, our life. And so we're going to close that out this week, and we'll pick back up our trip through John in a number of weeks from now. And we've seen throughout this, I hope you've seen, that Jesus has to be more than just a historical figure to us. It's not just, hey, here's some guy who existed once upon a time whose teaching you should follow. Instead, here's a man who lived then and is alive now because he is God. Because he is the very Son of God.
And so not only did he want to be our light and life then, he is our light and life now. And we must understand that. So hopefully that's what you've seen throughout this series and that what you will continue to see today. We're going to meet and hang out with Mary, Martha, and Lazarus again. This was a group of siblings that we met a couple of weeks ago, if you remember. The brother Lazarus became very ill, and his sisters Mary and Martha sent for Jesus
because they believed that Jesus could heal Lazarus, could take care of Lazarus' illness. They believed that they'd seen Jesus do great things, so they said, Jesus, you need to come and you need to heal him. But Jesus waited. For whatever reason, he waited, and Lazarus died, and Lazarus was actually dead 4 days before Jesus came, and he visited with Mary and Martha, and they were very upset that he didn't make it in time, and they were very distraught, they almost seemed somewhat angry with him. If you had been here, you'd been able to save him. And then Jesus does his most miraculous act to date throughout John. He raises raises Lazarus from the dead. A man that had been dead for 4 days was now up walking around. And as we saw last week, that caused an incredible amount of intention upon Jesus. And so the religious leaders began to redouble their efforts to try to get rid of this guy. And so they finally reached the point where, okay, we have to kill him. And we saw this shift in John to where it's not just, hey, we don't like this guy, but now he must die. He must die so that the Romans don't take over our country. As a result, Jesus slipped away to a more remote place, but now in this scene today, he's going to come back into Bethany, just a few miles away from Jerusalem in preparation of the Passover. And so what's neat about this passage that we'll see today, after all the excitement, after all the drama the last couple weeks of you got a guy coming back from the dead. I mean, you can't get any more dramatic than that. But then the fight last week between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, the Democrats and the Republicans coming together to agree this guy has to die, that he is our enemy. After all that, what we see today is this serene, beautiful scene of picture of worship. From a woman named Mary. So let's read John chapter 12. We'll look at the story first and then apply it to our lives. John chapter 12, verse 1 says, 6 days before the Passover, Jesus therefore came to Bethany where Lazarus was, whom Jesus has raised from the dead. So they gave a dinner for him there. Martha served, and Lazarus was one of those reclining with him at the table. Mary, therefore, took a pound of expensive ointment made from pure nard and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But Judas Iscariot, one of his disciples, he who was about to betray him, said, "Why is this ointment not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor?" He said this, John tells us, not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. and having charge of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put in it. Jesus said, "Leave her alone, so that she may keep it for the day of my burial. For the poor you will always have with you, but you do not always have me." Let's pray, and then we'll take a look at this story. God, as we tackle this passage, we take a look at this. We want to learn from it. It's definitely got a different feel than the last couple of weeks, but it's still a difficult passage for us to completely understand. And so I pray that you would illumine our minds, teach us, God, but do so not so that we know more stuff, but so that you can change our hearts. And so that we leave here having interacted with your word, being changed. Something about the way we think, the way we feel, or the way we act. I pray that you would teach us and change us today. In Jesus' name, amen. So we have a similar story to this in all four of the Gospels. If you remember, the four Gospels tell kind of a parallel story from different accounts. There's different things that happen in some of them. We see very similar stories on... I'm sorry, I'm getting a signal from the back, and he looks like he's playing charades. No, it is on. Yeah, I looked earlier. It's come loose. Apologies. Jesus never had to deal with this. You know that, right? He was just loud enough. It's attached. I'm loud. I will project. Back to loud. He's going like this, and I don't know what this means. Like, am I supposed to steal third? What is happening here? So we have a similar story in all four of the other Gospels. We see very similar stories in Matthew and Mark. But the one we find in Luke is probably different. There was probably a different occasion when a woman pours out a different kind of perfume. And so we see this scene not necessarily in the home of Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, but it was in the village of Bethany. Probably the whole village had gathered, and Jesus was most likely the guest of honor. This was done for his benefit. And so we see each of the characters here. Lazarus was just chilling out at the table, just hanging out with everybody that was sitting around talking. Maybe he was, you know, telling them stories of what it was like to be dead for 4 days. I don't know. But there was lots of conversation, and Martha was in her normal spot. She was serving and things like that. And then Mary did something that was incredibly out of the ordinary. Something that kind of took everybody by surprise. She brought out this ointment and this perfume, and she began to pour it on Jesus' feet. And so I want you to imagine in this scene, all the bustle and all the conversation in the room, kind of slowly, you've heard that before when something's happening, this conversation ends and then this conversation ends and everybody notices it's getting quiet, so everybody gets really quiet. And all the attention starts to go to Mary and what she's doing with this ointment on Jesus' feet. And so this fragrance is beginning to fill the now quiet room, and people are just watching in stunned silence. This particular perfume was made of something called nard, also called spikenard. It was from the root of a plant that grew in the mountains of India. So very rare at the time. It's fairly common today. I wanted to order some. I looked at Amazon. I just wanted to see what it smelled like. So you can get it for like $10.95 off of Amazon. And so I almost got some, but I'm reading the reviews, and they were really inconsistent. One person said it has a very woodsy, earthy smell, and the next one says, oh, it smells sweet. And then another one said it smells like a teenager's socks. So I'm like, I'm not sure I want this stuff around. But the point was that it was different perfume than we would smell today, but it was still such a luxury item for them. It would have smelled it, you know. We're used to soaps, we're used to things like that. They weren't, and so it was a beautiful thing that was being done, a luxury item. This imported ointment was very, very expensive. Judas actually does us the favor of appraising it for us at around 300 denarii. One denarius would have been a day's wage for a laborer, like a minimum wage laborer today. So if we were to translate that, not just the value, but maybe the buying power, today this little bottle of ointment that Mary is pouring out would be worth about $24,000 to us. It would have been a year's wage for a day laborer, an incredibly expensive little vial of perfume. And so Mary's family was either quite wealthy, or this was some sort of family heirloom that she was saving for a very special occasion. No matter what, this is an incredible act. This was completely out of the ordinary. This was, nobody really knew what was going on, and it can only be described as an act of what we would call worship. It was an act of worship. That word worship is an Old English word, worthskype, I think is how you'd say it in Old English. And it simply means to ascribe worth, to assign worth to something that is above you, that is above everything else. It's to give something worth. And so that's exactly what Mary is doing here. She is declaring Jesus to have great, incredible worth by doing this act. Now it's interesting, in the other accounts in both Matthew and Mark, all of the disciples begin to mutter and they disagree. But in John's account, he pinpoints somebody who speaks up and speaks for the disciples. Judas Iscariot speaks up. And I've always had a tough time with this. I have had a tough time with this because I think had I been there, I would have agreed with Judas. And I don't think you're supposed to say that. That feels really wrong to say, yeah, I'm on Judas's side. It just feels a little wrong. But there is something in his suggestion that seems somewhat logical to us, especially to a modern reader. You kind of read that and you go, okay, I kind of agree with that. Even though John mentions as a kind of an aside that Judas's motivations weren't for the poor, they were for himself. But just his suggestion of it being sold for the poor kind of makes sense to me. He seems to have a good point. This seems to be incredible waste. You really want to do something with this perfume? Go sell it and make something happen with it, Mary. And so Jesus at this point basically tells Judas, just shut up. And he does it by saying, you won't always have me. He says, maybe in other circumstances, Judas's comment would have been appropriate, but this was a very unique situation. This was Jesus knew what was coming in this following week. He knew what was going to happen. And so he knows that something's going on here. And I've always wondered if Mary got it or not. If she really understood what was going on, if she knew what was going to happen in the coming week, or it's possible that Mary did something that she didn't even realize here. What's neat is the one time in all of Jewish culture that what she did would make sense, to spend so much money, to have such a lavish pouring out onto somebody, would have been when somebody passed away. When a loved one passed away, it was common in the Jewish culture to spend lots of family money to try to drive off the stench of death for a few days so they could mourn. They didn't have embalming or anything like that, so decay happened pretty rapidly. So they'd cover it with all kinds of perfumes and spices. That's the only thing that would have been like what she was doing in Jewish culture. You just didn't do this to an alive person. So maybe unknowingly, maybe knowingly, whether she realized it or not, she was preparing his body for such a burial that would come within about a week's time. And that's what Jesus is saying, let this be for my burial. None of them had a clue what was going on, but Jesus is seeing the meaning here. I think maybe Mary was just overwhelmed by what Jesus had done. This incredible miracle that she had witnessed firsthand. She may have come this realizing this as she saw Lazarus come out of that grave. Maybe she asked herself, was this jar of perfume worth more than life itself? If given the choice, would she have traded this jar of perfume for her brother's life? And she might have thought, absolutely she would. So let me go ahead and express it as an act of worship. I don't know if that's what it was. And regardless of how she got there, what we see happening here in the now quiet room, quiet, fragrant room, is Mary had come to this understanding, an earth-shattering, paradigm-altering, soul-piercing conclusion that the very Son of God was sitting right in front of her. And all of that, the God of creation, a man who was there that spoke our world into existence, was in her very, very presence. And all she could do was worship. She had come to that understanding. And so all social conventions, all manners, all customs went out the door while she worshiped, and everybody just sat in silence and watched her. It's a beautiful story, isn't it? Absolutely beautiful story. And it's a beautiful example of for us in worship. And so let me highlight a few things that we can learn from this great story. First thing that we see is giving is an act of worship. The process of giving is an act of worship. Now, before in here, we've talked about the idea of time, talent, and treasure are three examples of resources that we have been given by our Creator that we are now able to give back as an offering. We're able to spend time and talent in service and in ministry. We are able to give back treasure in the form of a financial offering. And so these are all resources that we can give back to God. They're things that we possess and we're able to give as an offering. And what I want you to see from this is every time we serve or give, it is worship. It is worship. And that's hard for us to get our minds around sometimes. But every one of you that took a few hours out of your week and went over there and cleaned Matt's house for him because it's been sitting empty for a while, you did a great job, that everything looking clean in there and it looks great. You know what you did? You worshiped. Because you served. You gave of your time and your talent. Every time that offering plate passes by and you give back, you are worshiping. You are ascribing worth to something that is not you. Something that's not your stuff. And so what I want you to see is just the act of giving is worship. Too often today, we're so focused on results, aren't we? And so sometimes we think, well, the result must be what matters. And what we see here is there was no result of Mary pouring this out on Jesus' feet that had practical implications for everybody in that community. It seems like to me it was waste. But what I want you to see, whether it's time, talent, or treasure, it isn't wasted if it's worship. You do not waste your time if you're giving it to God. You do not waste your talent if you're giving it to God. You do not waste your treasure if you're giving it to God. It is not waste if it's worship. Let me expand on this, because we do too often worry about how our time is spent and how our money is spent. And so let me summarize it with three points that we get from other parts of Scripture here. If an offering is an act of true worship, and what I mean by that is if the motivation is to love and glorify God, not love and glorify self, but to love and glorify God, and it is an act of worship, then what we see is, number one, the value is in the giving, not the use. The value is in the giving, not the use. You see, we get so caught up on results. Well, I want this money to make a difference. I want this money to do this. I want my time to be spent this way. You know what? Just giving it to God is the worship. That's the act. Leave the results to God. The act is in the giving. That's what worship is. That means that the money you give or the time you take serving, it's not about the results, because the offering itself was worship. And that's where the value is found. Man, that's hard for me to get through my head. I'm so results-oriented, so want to focus on, is this working, is this not working? Sometimes, especially us modern Western thought people, need to step back and say, sometimes it's just about the act of worship. It's about the act of giving. Second thing that we see is the meaning is in the sacrifice, not necessarily the amount. Just like we get caught up on results, we also get caught up on dollar figures, don't we? Many of us focused on that $24,000 thing of perfume, and we're so focused on that price tag hanging off of the bottle and think, wow, that was amazing what she gave. That's incredible. Guys, the story is beautiful, not because Mary gave so much, not because of the price tag hanging off of there. The story is beautiful because it's one of sacrifice. She gave of a cherished possession, something she was saving. And she said, you know what? There is nothing else in my life that could ever happen from now till death that will surpass this moment of me to worship the living God in front of me. She came to that realization. It was about, the story is beautiful because of the sacrifice, not because of the price tag. We worry too much about the worth of things, don't we? I mean, we get so consumed. Think about how consumed we are at the value of inanimate objects in our lives. Not people, inanimate objects. not God, in it, things. We get so caught up with the price tag on things. But what we see here is an act of worship is an act of sacrifice. Don't get caught up in the amount. Get caught up in the gift. Get caught up in the sacrifice. She sacrificed something that was valuable to her. That's why it's a beautiful story. And so, like I said, I've kind of joked, none of this makes sense to our Western ears, does it? Our modern Western ears. This is all illogical. This is crazy. And that's because point three, the significance is spiritual, in the spiritual realm, not the physical. And that's why we can't connect with it. We don't always see, because we're results driven. We're price tag driven. We don't see those sorts of things. And we miss the fact that what she did here, you don't anoint an alive person. I mean, she kind of got it out of order here, didn't she? But the reason Jesus said, no, let her do it. There was incredible spiritual significance in what she was doing. Let us never forget, worship is a spiritual act, not just a physical one. It's something we do in the physical realm, but it is something that echoes into the spiritual realm. Worship is a spiritual act. It is not a business transaction. God, if I worship you a little bit here, then maybe you'll do this for me. If I wake up in the morning and do my devotion, then I'll have a good day. That's karma. We don't believe in that. We believe we worship God because he's God, period. Because it's a spiritual act, not a physical one. So whether it's time, talent, or treasure, may we see the value in just the act of giving it and not worry about the results. May we see the meaning in the sacrifice and not worry so much about the amount. And may we try to even begin to understand the significance in the spiritual and not just the physical. But as we give of all those things, whether it's time, talent, or treasure, it's also important to remember, and we see it so clearly in this story, that love is shown in extravagance, not in efficiency. Love is shown in extravagance, not in efficiency. As I've already confessed, I probably would have agreed with Judas's take on this. Would have seemed much more efficient to sell this and to put it to good use, not to dump it out on feet under the ground. It just didn't seem to make sense. But that's what we see about love, and that's what worship is. Ascribing worth is like expressing love. It is not about efficiency. It's shown in extravagance. It's shown in going beyond. I'll never forget when I first learned this. This is one of those great parenting moments where your child teaches you something. You're like, that's not how it's supposed to work. But my eldest daughter, Hannah, she was 3 or 4 at the time. I can remember the couch I was sitting on. I can remember our house at the time. I can't remember her exact age, but I remember this interaction. She had gotten this book of stickers. I mean, I don't know, maybe it was like 500 stickers or something like that. And they all said Hannah on them. It was one of those that if you've got a common name, you know you can buy at the store. And it's got Hannah written all over it. So there was a butterfly sticker that said Hannah, or a little doggy that said Hannah, or a little star that said Hannah. And she thought those were really cool because she was just starting to recognize her name. And so I'm sitting on the couch one day, and she brings out these stickers, and she begins taking them off, and she starts sticking them on me. And this was something new. I grew up with all boys. Boys don't do this. And so this was a new activity for me. I'm not sure, why are you putting stickers on me? Is this normal? And she just kept doing it and kept doing it. I mean, we passed 30 stickers, probably up to 40. I mean, they're all over me. I'm like covered. And then she starts running out of room, so she starts putting them on my face, and I'm like, okay, I got to put an end to this. And so, nice, smart, efficient daddy got logical with a 4-year-old, because that's good parenting, right? And I said, Hannah, I appreciate these stickers, but I mean, they have your name on them. These are really neat kind of things. I think you should probably save these. And you put them on stuff that's yours, or maybe put them in your room or something like that, and use them for that. And I said, I don't think you should waste them on me. And then she said something that I can still hear her little voice saying today. She said, but Daddy, I love you. And it was like at that instant, a spiritual truth just hit me. And I understood this passage for the very first time in my life. I said, I get it. Love is not found in logic and efficiency. It's found in extravagance of going over and above and saying, I love you more than these stickers. It's what she was trying to communicate to her hard-headed father. These stickers are not as valuable to me as you are. And that's what we see Mary doing here. It's not about efficiency. It's about extravagance. When we give, it's about expressing that love. When we worship, it's about expressing that love. And I think something else Mary realized here in the ability to actually pour this out was a recognition that she could not outgive God. You cannot surpass God's extravagance. You know, that the question of whether or not love is efficiency or extravagance was answered at the cross, wasn't it? That was so extravagant. God could have solved the problem in so many ways, and yet he sacrificed his own son for me and for you. You cannot outgive God. Giving is an act of worship. We have to see that from this story. Every bit of giving of time, talent, and treasure. And my prayer for us as a church is that we would be extravagant givers, not efficient ones. Giving is an act of worship. Remember that as you give of your time, talent, and treasure. The second thing that we learn from this story is that worship must come before service, before ministry, before doing our good deeds. Worship must be the priority. I've actually heard people make the case from this passage, and this is a disgusting point, and it's selfish, and it's just so backwards. I've actually had people tell me, because of this passage, we shouldn't go and minister to the poor, that we shouldn't care about the needs of others, because Jesus said the poor are always going to be there. He said, don't worry about them. They're always going to be there. I said, that is a gross misunderstanding of this passage and taking that one comment completely out of context. It's absolutely insane. It doesn't mean we don't care about the poor. That is so ridiculous based on everything else that Jesus taught and did. The pattern is there. We are to care about the poor. We are to care about those in need. We are to care about those who are suffering from addiction in our community. We are to care about those who don't have any other voice speaking up for them. But what this does mean is that our ministry to the poor does not matter if our heart is not, first of all, in the right place. If we aren't worshiping Christ, then our outreach to those in need doesn't matter. And here's why. You can continue to do your good deeds. I'm not knocking good deeds. It's something a non-Christian can do, a good act. But it's often a band-aid on cancer. When we put Christ first and we go out in Christ's name and we reach out to the poor, then there is a possibility not just of one need getting met, but of change actually happening. Our focus must first be on Christ. Mary's expression of worship surpasses anything that could have been done by the disciples with that $24,000. Let that sink in for a second. Mary's act of pouring it out onto Jesus' feet surpasses anything those disciples could have done with that money, because she was seeking Christ first. And this illustrates a problem that we have. Sometimes we have a problem in understanding the problem. Here's what I mean. We think that if only we had just enough money, we could solve the world's problems. We could put this community back together. If we could just get some more companies to come in and get some employment here, and we could get some donations, and we could build things up, and we could just, you know, make it look better, and we put money into it, and we put pour money into recovery programs, and we just give and give all this money. If we just had enough, we could fix the world's problems. That's an outright lie. That's called humanism. And the faith in humanism is put in humans, not in God. Just as we saw last week with the Pharisees, when we do this, we are trusting in worldly solutions, not in God. We're trusting in ourselves. Here's a basic truth we all need to get. We could have all the money in the world and we still couldn't save the world. We could have every single dime in this world, and we could not save the world. We cannot buy people's way out of hell. Only Jesus can save them. The problem is sin. Worship reveals, then, not just what we believe is important to tend to and give attention to. Worship reveals what we believe to be more important and superior to us. The act of worship is also an acknowledgement, because it must come before service. It's an acknowledgement that God knows better than we do how to spend our money. God knows better than we do how to spend our time. And the giver of our gifts and talents knows better than we do how to use them. That's what it... Worship must come before our service. We don't have the answers, but we worship the one who does. And it's so important for us to remember. I want our church to be a loving church and a giving church and a church that reaches out to the poor and those who are ignored by every other facet of society and the addicted and the ignored, whatever it may be. I want us to reach out to them. We must help wherever we can, but we must do so out of an overflow of our love for Jesus Christ, not a belief in our own self-effort. It must be pursuing Christ that we do these things, not in a, hey, look what we can do, because it'll fall flat every time. Worship must come before our service. Obviously, not everyone understood what Mary did, and certainly not everyone understood who Jesus was. Despite everything that had happened, and we've seen this time and time again, these religious leaders just don't get it. Let's look at one final point in a few of these last verses, 9 through 11 in John 12. When the large crowd of the Jews learned that Jesus was there, they came not only on account of him, but also to see Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. So the chief priests made plans to put Lazarus to death as well, because on account of him, many of the Jews were going away and believing in Jesus. So all these crowds are starting to come around. They'd heard of what happened. They knew Jesus was back in town right there with the guy just weeks earlier or days earlier. He had raised from the dead, and they wanted to see this. And somehow all these religious elites took this as a threat. And they continued to seek Jesus' death, but they also added Lazarus to the hit list. They said, we got to take him out too, because people are, let that sink in for a second. Their strategy is, let's undo what God has done so that people won't believe in the one who came from God. It's amazing when we stop and think about it. And there's only one explanation for something that seems so contrary, so opposite to what Mary did. Wouldn't you agree? This is the exact opposite of what Mary did. The only explanation we have is a lack of worship demonstrates a lack of understanding. A lack of worship demonstrates a lack of understanding. The only explanation is to realize that if someone, anyone, even today, does not actively worship Christ and seek him with time, talent, and treasure, They don't worship physically. They don't worship spiritually. They do not pursue Christ. The only explanation is they don't understand who he actually is. That's the only explanation. A lack of worship means a lack of understanding. The moment that Mary took it all in and realized the Son of God was sitting right there in front of her, she couldn't do anything but worship. Didn't care about the perfume. Didn't care about the gazes of people looking at her, judging her for what she was doing. She didn't care. Didn't care at all. When she came to the realization that Jesus is the Son of God, she could do nothing but worship. What a beautiful picture. Isn't it interesting? We're in the information age, and we lack understanding probably more than any other time in history. Why is that? Because we have a lot of information. And when we have a lot of information, that means we have a lot of distractions. And so that's really the question, the closing question today is, where is your worship? We're created to be worshiping beings. You worship something. What is it that you worship? Do you worship God? Is it shown in the giving of your time, talent, and treasure? Is it shown in a physical act that echoes into the spiritual realm? Is it shown in your worship? As we go ahead and stand up and Rick and Ruth Ann sing, and we have a time of response, I want to encourage you.